Raging Asian.
Raging Asian.
Acha Hong Hong Nijin.
肆虐的亚洲.
Nagngangalit Asiano.
Asia Ugro.
Mga Mukasia.
Arekuru Asiajin.
Seongnan Asia.
Raging Asian.
Ugro Asiali.
Nocho A.
Bongki Ilm Asia.
Ugro Atia.
Hi there, I'm Chloe Wong Mercero, and this is episode 1 of Raging Asian. Today's episode is called Becoming Your Mother, and our very first guest on this podcast is extra special. Not only is she a renowned Chinese-Canadian artist and a beloved professor of fine arts at Concordia University, she is also a mother of two to yours truly, me. Mary Soyu Wong is a multidisciplinary artist who immigrated to Canada from Hong Kong in 1963. She's exhibited in numerous solo and group exhibitions in Canada and internationally, in Europe, Asia, and the USA. Soyu's artwork draws from personal memory, history, and legacy to explore identity formation and alterity as a social construct. Welcome, Mom, to the Raging Asian Podcast.
Cool. I guess it's great to be here. I'm not sure. It depends on what you're going to put me through.
Well, this week's episode is called Becoming Your Mother.
In terms of how I really just am so afraid of becoming my mother, you mean? Or
my
worst nightmare?
All of us, yes.
Yes.
Before we get started, let's start with a little background context. Your immigration story. That's basically the Asian equivalent of a creation story.
There's so much to that story. You read in my bio that I came here to Canada in 1963. It was actually 3 years after my dad had already immigrated to Canada. And I was only 7 years old back in Hong Kong. And maybe one of the more interesting stories in this context is to just recall how proud my mom was that she did what she needed to do to kind of get us into this country. Like I said, because my dad had already come to Canada and he had been here since 1960. My mom was left in Hong Kong with the three of us kids. I was seven, my brother was five, and then there was a four-year-old sister. And you know, after 3 years of waiting to hear from my dad whether or not we were going to actually come to Canada to join him, she was starting to kind of freak out a little bit, because there was always a lot of stories, especially back in those days, where generations of immigrant men would just pick up another wife, you know, when they were in North America, and then they would leave their own families, you know, in the old country behind. And I remember my mom telling me how she wasn't going to let any of that kind of stuff go down without a fight. So she took the three kids to the immigration office and made an appointment to ask on the Hong Kong side. I mean, in those days, usually the person who's living in the country that you want to immigrate to files an application, and then it gets approved, and then it has to go to the country where you're leaving and have the application approved on that end. But my mom did exactly the opposite. She was like, not waiting for my dad to put in the application. She took us to the immigration office, and she said to the immigration officer, listen, my husband's probably going to get, you know, a second wife, and he's going to leave me and my kids behind, and I am not going to let that happen. So either you rubber stamp us to go to Canada, or I'm going to leave these kids here with you.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, that was my mom. And
yeah,
that's how I always remember, you know, your papa.
The ultimate tiger mom.
That's right. She
yeah.
wasn't going to let her husband get away with anything.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's always been feisty, papa. Mm-hmm. You know, she was someone who kind of fought her own way ever since she was little, because she decided when her dad remarried and took on a second wife, she didn't want to have a stepmother. She was about 14 years old in mainland China, in Guangzhou. Oh, and she thought, well, I'm not going to put up with this. And she snuck out of China and went to Hong Kong by herself without telling her father or telling anybody. Yeah. But she knew that she had an aunt in Hong Kong who loved her a lot and would give her a place to stay. So she snuck out of China on her own at 14.
Yeah. And I remember that story. And it was like right on the eve or something of the communist revolution. So she actually managed to like leave China and make it to Hong Kong before the revolution.
Exactly. Very close to it. I mean, she was like, she was really lucky. And, you know, at 14, she went and worked in a cigarette factory so she could make her own spending money. And I think she managed to even finish high school in Hong Kong. Mm. So, yeah, that's your papa. Feisty. You know, very independent. And I think that that's something that I really admired. And I'm really grateful to inherit that kind of like determination, self-determination and self-will.
So you guys immigrated to Vancouver initially. So you mentioned you were three siblings, but then upon arriving in Vancouver, your mother had another child, David. Uncle David. And but you were the eldest, so you're the oldest sibling of all of them. How was that experience?
Oh, Gong Gong was someone who grew up without a dad. Papa was someone who grew up without a mom, in a way. Her mom died when she was 14. My dad's mom, my dad's father died when he was, I think, like, maybe 5 or 6. Wow. So neither one of them had a full kind of, like, full-on parenting unit as models. But at the same time, they were also both very old school, especially Gong Gong, who really believed that their job as parents were to go out and earn the money and make a living, especially as immigrant parents. And as the oldest child, it was my job to raise the family, the kids, take care of the children and kind of keep the house clean and
cook
the meals while they worked. And I, you know, distinctly remember, you know, the early years, you know, really sort of enjoying my childhood until one day my younger brother David came into, you know, the world. I was 10 years old. My mom and dad had this new baby. Now we were four kids, and my dad took me by the hand while I was watching TV one night and walked me into the kitchen. He goes, okay, today you stop being a kid and you start taking on responsibilities. And I had to learn how to wash the rice and cook rice. And then it was like, you know, after that, chores after chores after chores.
Diapers, all that.
Yeah, oh my God. Bathtub full of diapers that I had to wash after dinner every night.
Oh no.
For your Uncle David.
Right, because there are no disposable diapers.
He owes me, man. Yeah. Ooh. He owes me big time. So, when you're asking me about what it was like to be an older child, there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of stress to kind of support my mom and dad. Another story that sort of like marks that kind of experience was, I remember, you know, going to school and doing my best and everything. But there was one year, I guess my parents were making money and needing to fill out an income tax forms. And my dad expected me to know how to do it.
Oh my gosh.
But I didn't know how to do it. And I got reamed and whipped. Because I couldn't help him. He says, what are they teaching you at school? Why don't you know how to fill these income taxes?
I was, one useful thing, learning to do your income tax, which they never teach you in school.
At 10. But,
yeah, what 10-year-old knows how to do their taxes, though?
Well,
no 10-year-old. Oh, yeah. Well, and you've mentioned, yes, of course it's interesting. You've said, like, I've often heard you say that you had to parent your parents as well. What do you mean by that?
So like I said, both of them didn't have parents when, you know, sort of maybe as models. But when I say I had to parent them, I had to kind of take on a lot of the day-to-day stresses, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, the ones that they were experiencing.
Did you have to, like, act as also their, like, translator or...
Absolutely.
That's like the typical image I have in my mind of like an immigrant child who usually has to like translate or like yeah. broker between the parents,
yeah.
immigrant parents, and like.
Like when my mom had a stroke and she had to go to the doctors, and then, or no, it wasn't even a stroke. She was going, she had had some issues with her menstruation, and I had to go with her to the doctors and translate, but okay. I didn't know. Barely what the words were
yeah.
That were, you know, I needed to put from mm-hmm. English into Chinese so that my mom knew what she was, because she had a low iron. She was suffering from, okay. I guess, anemia due to her heavy, you know, menstrual
flow, yeah.
blood flow. Things like that, moments like that where, you know, I was like, ew, barely
child,
even
like,
having,
yeah.
You know, knew anything about right. menstruation, never mind.
You probably didn't have your translate. Period yet, you know, so yeah. you didn't know. Yeah.
Or always kind of having to mediate conversations, like if a teacher had to say something about my siblings and have to translate mm-hmm. that for my dad. Yeah, translation was a big thing, but the parenting part was also because I was left to kind of like take care of my brothers and sisters, they often just left the the responsibility for me to decide what was right and what was wrong for
okay.
my siblings. And sometimes I kind of had to just say to my mom and dad that, like, you're the father here. Like, for example, mm-hmm. one time I'd already moved out of the house by then. I came home and Gong Gong had found a bunch of Playboy magazines under Uncle David's bed.
Oh, no.
But he was too embarrassed to talk to David about it.
Okay.
He was the dad, and he. Mm-hmm. I came home, and the first thing he did was pull out all these Playboy magazines, and he said, look, I found these under your brother's bed. What are you going to do about it? And I said,
I'm
not going to do anything.
Yeah.
I think it's your job. You have to talk to him
yeah.
about it. And I had to kind of, like, teach my dad how to do it.
Be a dad.
Like, be
yeah.
a dad. And then... Another kind of thing that I felt I had to do was always mediate between them, because Gong Gong and Paul Paul were under a lot of stress and they fought a lot for mm-hmm. years. They were like, mm-hmm. so Paul Paul always used me like her girlfriend, and she would just, you know, every time, you know,
right.
she had a chance, she would rant and rave in my ear about Gong Gong and how she was unhappy with what he was doing, this or that. And I would have to kind of be the mediator for
right.
their fights. And there would be mm-hmm. times when I got so angry.
The unpaid therapist couples.
I don't know if I was a therapist. I think I was a ping pong ball who had messages inside of me
okay.
that I had to deliver back
right,
and forth.
Back and forth.
Yeah. I don't think I knew enough to be a therapist.
Mm.
But so parenting in the sense of, I think it only came years later when I realized all of the stresses that I was experiencing and how I carried the weight of everybody else's
right.
happiness on my shoulder, that I had to go and tell Gong Gong and Paul Paul that maybe if they had marital problems, they should take care of them and get a divorce.
Oh my God.
I remember telling Paul Paul that one time.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you still with him if you're so unhappy? Because I was getting tired of hearing her
right.
woes. You should just get a divorce. And she goes, no, I'm not like that unhappy. Yeah.
It's hard to tell, but Gong Gong and Paul Paul, it was a love marriage as opposed to
right.
An arranged marriage or a match. So it took leaving Vancouver to come to Montreal to finally kind of put that distance between having to parent your parents. Like you made that choice to come to Montreal and,
mm-hmm.
and break that
Yeah, but it's interesting, you know, I don't think I ever stopped parenting my parents,
mm-hmm.
even after I discovered that I should not, it was not my place or even my role, or
mm-hmm.
I wasn't even very, really necessarily capable. But it was a role that Gong Gong and Paul Paul took on. They expected me to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they didn't call it parenting, and that's sort of like a Western terminology, but it felt like parenting to
mm-hmm.
me. Because there was a lot of things that I kind of had to learn how to be a mother for my siblings and then learn how to be a mother for my parents. Mm-hmm. And so that in a way it was only for self-interest because I needed nurturing from my parents, mm-hmm. and I wasn't getting it. So I wanted parents who could parent me, mm-hmm. you know? So what I'm getting at is that it never really stopped, but it got, I was able to understand it more when I left, mm-hmm. and I was able to kind of take on the role differently.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not as if, you know, your Gong Gong and Popo didn't know how to parent me. I mean, of course, they were parents in the best ways that they know how. For example, like Gong Gong, you know, lived by these kind of Confucius, you know, like teachings of how to be a good father.
Right.
And Popo, you know, lived by certain kind of understandings of what a good mother was, you know. And a lot of that had more to do with providing us with a safe home, mm-hmm. and security, financial security, and good food on the table and clothes on our back, and opening the door to opportunities. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, they came to Canada as opposed to staying in Hong Kong, because the idea mm-hmm. of having four kids in Hong Kong on a musician's salary, which Gong Gong was, and mm-hmm. at the time, I think, you know, Popo was only working in factories, wasn't going to be able to put four kids through school, because in Hong Kong, everything, yeah. any kind of good education had to be private system,
right.
and that meant tons and tons of money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Gong Gong and Popo were doing what they understood as being good parents. But ironically, you know, having kind of come to North America and being raised in the Western paradigm, in a way, my expectations of parenting or my understanding of parenting also combined emotional mm-hmm. connection.
Right. Well, it was different from yeah. what your parents, like, traditional yeah. understanding of what yeah. good parents are
yeah.
to, yeah, the kind of American Western conception of good parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think that that's one of the things mm-hmm. that I guess I'm talking about when I'm parenting my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I was the primary emotional support for both my mom
right.
and dad.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't go out and make money. I didn't do all that kind of other mm-hmm. stuff. But I held their hand when they went through difficult times.
Right.
You know, I held my siblings' hands. You know, so though that's the kind of parenting I mm-hmm. think I'm thinking about. You know,
yeah.
just in reflecting right now, it's
the
like,
emotional rock.
Yeah,
of the
family. Yeah,
yeah.
Because I was like basically a rock, but you know, some place where everybody kind of like threw all their
emotions,
so that they could just let that go and then go out into the
mm-hmm.
world. And in a way, because you know, this program is called Raging Asian, and I think that kind of like is a systemic situation when you think about a lot of people of color, especially immigrants of color, who live a certain life where they kind of have to go out into the world and face all of the discrimination and all the trauma and atrocities and the kind of alienations on a day-to-day basis, but they still have to put on a really brave face and show their mm-hmm. the best of themselves, and they don't get
right.
to kind of express or vent or whatever,
yeah.
and they go home, and that's, you know, and if they do express it
mm-hmm.
Like within the Black community, why Black women are called, you know, raging or whatever, angry Black women, it's categorized as rage, but it's pent up frustration, it's pent up, you
mm-hmm.
know, anger, and I think that is one of those kinds of very difficult things when we think about different communities, and I can use mm-hmm. Western thinking to appreciate and understand it, but I know that in even like Confucius, you know, teachings.
Philosophy. Confucius.
Yeah, you're really supposed to even take the worst
right.
things and, you know, like breathe
yeah.
into it and try and be Zen no matter how
yeah.
many times you're going to get
keep
punched in
calm.
The gut.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I've seen you go through the experience of taking care of your mom and dad when they were aging, and when they had to be either hospitalized or moved
mm-hmm.
to their condo instead of the family home, And so maybe that also, those that ideas of parenting heighten or compound maybe some of the emotions too, or the tension at times when caring for your aging parents. And
yeah, they're conflicting.
Yeah.
Well, see, when you reflect on it like that, the first thing I think about is there's a couple of things, okay? So when you're an immigrant child, you're raised to, honestly, from the day one, as soon as we arrived in North America, my dad would say to me, like, you know, because he was just reconnecting with us. And so after 3 years of being apart, you know, I guess he was trying to impress upon us the kind of kids or children he would want as a father.
Okay.
Knowing the kind of children that were being raised in North America, and he would say things to us like, you know, so many of the kids here, you know, as soon as their parents get old, like North Americans or white people, as soon as their kids get old enough, you know, they send, as soon as their parents get old, they send them off to old folks home. You better never do that to me.
Right.
So yeah. I grew up with the understanding or the thought in my mind that my parents always expected me to take care of them no matter what. Mm-hmm. But when they got old, they would have to live with me and I would have to,
yeah,
you know, take care of them till they died.
Yeah.
And in general, you know, 90% of, you know, immigrant populations, that's how they tend to their elders, right? But weirdly, like when Gogo and Popo started getting older, mm-hmm, let's say when Gogo was, you know, in his 80s and 90s, one of the first things they said to us then was like, not only don't we need you to take care of us, we don't want to live with you, we don't want to have to deal with you guys,
right,
and your children. We love seeing our grandchildren, right, and we do want to take care of and, you know, spend time with them,
yeah,
but we don't want to be permanent babysitters, like,
yeah,
you know, in the old country, that's,
yeah,
what elders would do,
right,
you know,
yeah,
they would work all their life, give, you know, their children everything, their children get married, and then they're raising another family because,
right,
they're raising the,
yeah,
grandchildren because they're, you know,
yeah,
built-in babysitters.
Pick up or what.
So yeah. Gogo and Popo was like, no way. I remember being so upset by that because, like, even when I was giving birth to you and I already had Emmy, I said to Popo, well, you know, I'll pay your airfare. Can you come to Montreal,
yeah,
and just give me some support for a month,
okay,
right? And she says, no, no. She says,
oh,
I'll, you know, you can bring the baby to me and I'll play with it.
I'll play with it.
But I'm not coming because,
right,
I'm too, whatever. I, like,
yeah,
she felt she was not.
She wasn't
interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the funny thing about, like, going back to you saying, like, you had to parent your parents, or, like, you had to teach your parents how to be parents. Like, they didn't really, almost, they were not interested in being parents.
Maybe,
you know?
Never.
Maybe never.
I mean, in a way, Popo was happy not really being a parent and letting me do all the housework,
right,
and, you know, letting me cook the meals and, mm-hmm, take care of her kids. She loved going to work herself to make money.
Right.
It was her.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. You know, Popo was, like, unique in that sense that she enjoyed her life. And when she wasn't working,
mm-hmm,
on the weekends, she would go out and play mahjong.
Right.
So she had a great life as a mom because it wasn't, you know, I'm a stress. The only,
right,
time when she was stressed was when she wasn't making enough money to help support the family.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I always said Papa wore the pants in the family.
Mm.
You know, Gong Gong,
mm-hmm,
was making money, but, you know, not as consistent as Papa was.
Mm-hmm.
But so getting back to, like, how was I dealing with, you know, the aging parents,
right,
so that when they did get, you know, to a point where they were older, and because I was living in Montreal by the time Gong Gong, you know, was in his 70s, and, you know, there was always the expectation that I wanted, well, from me personally, to make sure,
mm-hmm,
that you guys had a connection with them,
right,
your grandparents,
yes,
that you knew you had Chinese grandparents since you're, you know,
mm-hmm,
biracial. So going home every summer to Vancouver and spending time,
mm-hmm,
with your grandparents was important. But whenever I went home, even though I had moved away 5,000 miles and, you know, I'd been away for quite a number of years, the role of being the eldest daughter was always still imposed on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was always enormously stressful.
Yeah.
I
remember we would go back and then we would clean their house or something like that. You know, would fly 8,000 kilometers across the country just to clean up Gong Gong and Popo's house.
Yeah.
Empty all the plastic bags from their dishwasher.
It's like their annual spring cleaning was once a year when I arrived. And then similarly, same thing. As soon as, you know, I arrived, it was the annual family gathering. Everybody would get together. Mm-hmm. And it just went on and on from there.
Right, yeah.
How this got to do with me raging? Is that where we're going with this conversation?
It's not. It's about aging.
Aging, yeah.
Aging. Okay. And becoming your mother.
Well, so, yeah. Aging is an interesting thing. Watching Popo age, mm-hmm. and seeing how she went through these various stages, like I was saying earlier in conversation, that, you know, she was really an independent woman, good thinker, free will, and all that kind of stuff, and how work defined her. Mm-hmm. Unlike a lot of women.
Well, like, you're a workaholic now.
Yeah.
You love your work,
let's
too.
Let's not go there.
Okay.
But so when Popo had to retire finally, and she couldn't, like, because, she, you know, of whatever age, and also just retirement, when she reached her retirement age and she didn't need to work anymore, it was really actually hard for her. She kind of felt like she lost her identity. She went through a period where she kind of became afraid of doing things, because she would just spend hours on hours watching TV, and not going to any, not participating in any activities, and getting very withdrawn. And I remember that when she turned 65 was the year that Audrey was, no, it was when Auntie Sherry got married. And no, yeah, it was when Audrey was born, and same thing, Auntie Sherry said, can you come down and help me out and spend some time with me? And she flew Popo down from Vancouver to
San Francisco.
And Popo spent, like, I think 2 or 3 weeks there.
Wow.
It really upset her. She suddenly kind of lost sight of what she was, because she was stuck in this house and she didn't have her own friends.
She didn't have
a community. Yeah. She didn't have a purpose anymore. And she was just trying to cook for Auntie Sherry and clean and do these kind of mundane housewife things that she never
wanted to do.
Never familiar with, and was actually, and
she
it
hated
made
it.
Her
yeah.
feel really old. Like, and she came back and she suddenly aged.
Okay.
Like, she just, like, she appeared older, she, you know, and so that was really a odd and hard to watch, right? Gong Gong took to retirement differently because, you know, in fact, when he retired was actually when his career started. Once he stopped working, you know.
Did he start to get recognized as a
musician and he started to be able to perform and carry his art?
Daughter number one is here.
I'm on the clock. I only have so many hours. Okay. I'm literally working, guys. Like,
okay. Raging Asian number two.
Well, it's interesting because even though I've always known that Popo was a very independent, very fierce lady, and that always came through, but most of my memories spent with Popo are, you know, sitting on the couch in the condo watching Chinese soap operas or Korean soap operas. And I never understood, but we would just sit there and watch it for like hours and hours of the day with her little peanuts next to her couch and her fold-out armchair.
Right. And she has copious amounts of, like, soap operas. She had a monthly subscription to a video store where she would go once a week to pick up her 50 episode kind of, like, segments of different shows.
Yeah.
And you remember the boxes and boxes of videos that she had that we had to figure out what to do with when we packed up her house.
Wow.
It's kind of scary because, yeah, I've definitely become that crazy binge watching television person that I said I would never let myself do what my mom did.
Yeah.
Because I always felt so sad for her that she spent so much of her life just like
in
watching
front of the TV.
TV.
Yeah.
And actually, I remember one time when Auntie Sherry was complaining to me about how she thought Popo was not a good mom. And that she just, you know, because whenever Auntie Sherry felt like she was going to Papa for emotional support or advice or something that was going on in her life, and she just would never feel that she could get that from Papa. And I mean, by then, you know, I was much more older and let's say more self-aware, but also, you know, aware of some of the kind of things that contributed to the way that my mom was behaving. And I said to Auntie Sherry, you know, she never learned how to be a mom, but, and maybe she never really was allowed or encouraged to express her emotions, because also Gong Gong was not really encouraged because they didn't have that as models. But she learned to allow herself to feel things by watching these dumb soap operas.
Which filled you, with emotion.
Dramatic. And I said to Auntie Sherry, you know, and additionally, you know, maybe her parenting skills aren't great because she learned how to parent through TV. She did. I mean, you know, in a way, it's kind of awful to say, but, you know, she only knows how to say the pat things and, you know, offer us the very kind of like standard stereotypical kind of maternal support. But Papa didn't like, you know, couldn't handle the expectations. And sometimes I always felt that she looked to me and resented me as well, because I was forced, first of all, to help raise her kids. And when her kids were having troubles, she, you know, had to turn to me to help her figure out what it was that she, you know, needed to do, like, and that was hard. But
in some ways, the soap operas too might have been like an escape as well.
Absolutely. But see, now, you know, so I was very judgmental, I guess, when Popo was, you know, like alive, and I felt, you know, like all this idea of me parenting them because I wanted her to be more active and all this, and get up and go and do things. But I recognize that in the same way that I put so much time and energy into working now as an older person myself, as a mother of two children and so on and so forth, and having gone through all kinds of difficult challenges in life, well, so there are a couple of things. I look to, you know, TV as escapism to kind of like find place to locate my or release tension.
Entertainment.
So this is why I used to love watching things like, what's his name, the chef,
Gordon Ramsay,
swearing and yelling, fuck this, you shithead, stuff, saying stuff like that to other people, which gave me so much pleasure because it made me, like, I wish I could say things like that to people, but I can't, so I couldn't rage, but I could do it through TV.
Like, so, here was this white guy yelling at a bunch of useless chefs.
Things that I would want to say all the time to people around me. So that's, there's that one kind of escapism. But the other thing was that I understand why Popo was watching a lot of Chinese TV and or TV that was emotional, because it gave her kind of an outlet. But for me, it's actually different slightly, because, I mean, I'm living in a, you know, a predominantly Western environment. I have a mixed family, a husband who's white. I don't have a lot of Chinese friends close to me. I'm not, you know, always in Chinatown. And I have to watch Asian soap operas.
Right, to get your Asian dose.
To just make me feel like I'm connected to something larger than what is around me, because there's always a part of me that's not being kind of acknowledged visually as
culturally,
well as culturally, you know. So I watch my TV, my crazy TV, for that.
I don't know if they can hear the Cantonese speakers next door.
And that's why having this studio was one of the best finds ever, just to being able to sit in a quiet studio but still hear like the garment factory workers next door yelling and screaming at each other in Chinese. Makes me feel so at home. It's really strangely comforting. And their sounds are coming through the walls right now.
That's so funny. So now let's talk about how you hate the way Amelia, my older sister, and I mother you now.
Oh my God. Well, that's also the dilemma of becoming older when your children start to treat you like you're a child.
I will admit, I love to bother my mom and just in the morning go into her room. Oh, mommy, mommy, morning, Joe-san, Joe-san.
And rouse me out of my sleep.
She hates it.
Treat me like I'm a little toy. Yeah, I don't know what that's about. Well, I wouldn't say that I absolutely hate you guys mothering me, but it's all part of aging. I mean, nobody wants to feel like they're mm-hmm. getting old.
Right.
And yeah. I think, you know, like same thing I said to you, Emmy the other day when we were driving around, I said, don't ever buy me a walker. Okay?
What if you need one?
So you know what? I said exactly the same thing that my mom said to me when she was like at the point where when she was 80 and I kept saying to her, well, shouldn't we get you one of those kind of like shopping buggies so that you can carry your groceries and you don't fall down? And she says, don't you dare buy me one of those. I'll never use it. Oh, or God. A cane. Yeah. I'm never going to use a cane. It's like I do not need to be reminded of the fact that I'm getting old and I'm not getting around.
That's true. When so I think of Gong Gong, like, and his cane, half the time he used it to, like,
hit people
and hold the door open or bang and bang that.
Well, and that's the other kind of, you know, thing that you've inherited because, you know, you have two grandparents who, on both sides, your maternal and your paternal, who are people who refuse to accept that they're aging. Look at your grandmother on your father's side who, you know, is 90-something years old and still lives in the country by herself. Mm-hmm. And pretends that she can, you know, haul, like, you know, buckets of wood by herself when she really can't. And same thing, Gong Gong jumping over parking meters when he was in his 60s.
Oh, my God.
To walk down the street and pretend that he was, like, only 20 years old.
Well, doing 100 push-ups every morning till he was, like, 90 years old. And
yeah, but that makes the children go crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that but that's maybe kind that's of why you guys are mothering me. You guys are just trying to remind me that I am getting older and I have to be more careful. And that's the part I hate. It's not that I
Well, no one likes careful. To be reminded that they're getting older. And it's the whole independence thing, too. Like, people hate, when you have been very independent all of your life, like Gong Gong and Papa, and Papa especially being so independent. And finding herself, you know, through work and, like, having a sense of economic independence to suddenly have to retire and then stay at home or, like, suddenly someone else taking care of you. Like, no way that, it's so hard to
Well, Gong Gong really kind of put it clearly once because he was, like, saying, you know, it's not that I don't accept getting old. It's just that I demand that I be treated with integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's more important than anything. You know, you can't take my right to decide for myself. But ironically, you know, when you've got parents that are getting old, you know that often they're making decisions that aren't the best for themselves and that you have to start intervene and step in. And for me, I feel like, okay, I'll try my best not to be like my parents. I'll try really hard not to turn into my mom who watches too much TV or become overly ambitious and not acknowledging my age like my dad. But ultimately, I've become exactly the things that I fear I would become because the more that you worry about becoming something, the more you're actually focusing on it. So,
And those are your models. Those are your models for aging. And
But I still have... I haven't sat down and made a list, but I still want to make a list of the things that I don't want to put my children through when I get old because of what I had to do.
Right.
Maybe my parents didn't do it consciously, but, you know, for example, if it came to a time where I was debilitated and I needed support in the house to help me get around, or, you know, I wouldn't refuse help, because Gonggong and Popo always refused help.
Right.
And they would be for fear of intruders, mm-hmm. for fear of, like, okay, because they didn't also have language skills. They couldn't speak English, and they can't have somebody coming into the house, or for fear of being robbed. Gonggong kept all his money in his house, in his bed. So he couldn't let a housekeeper come.
Right.
And so those are the kind of things. But
number two on the list, don't hoard your plastic bags in your dishwasher.
Don't hoard plastic bags. And what else they would do? I don't know. They would, all the coffee jars, because they drank instant coffee.
Instant coffee, yeah.
And when we cleaned up their apartment, there were like hundreds of empty coffee jars in the cupboards.
Oh, no.
Because they were glass, and, you know, they didn't want to throw those out.
Yeah, you can't throw anything away. Everything can be reused.
Yeah. I don't know why you brought that up. Just took me to another
on your list. Because we're making your list of what not to do as you age, or what you don't want to, like, how you don't want to be your parents,
Well, I remember also like the sense of dignity that you lose. Like, my parents felt, I mean, maybe Popo didn't feel that way because I was able to, you know, take care of her. She wasn't so proud, you know, she would let us take care of her, but mm-hmm. Gonggong was definitely had enormous pride, because he always, you know, spent all his life trying to prove to us that he was like a superhuman being, superhero, right? Doing push-ups at 95. So of course he's not going to want that image of himself destroyed. Similarly, like, when the more and more sick he got, Papa wouldn't let any of his friends come and visit him at the hospital, because she didn't want them to see him frail. And
Because that's not what he would have wanted either. Yeah.
And no photos of him being taken by friends. Because I remember one time somebody came over and visited him, and they took a photograph of Gonggong in hospital. She freaked out. And she was ranting and raving and calling around everybody. Wow. Said, you better find that man and tell him to delete that picture. How disrespectful. But I understand it, because
you're at your most vulnerable, and you're not. He was at his most vulnerable.
But there's also the other part of being like a person of color, like being Chinese, even though in Vancouver, you know, there was a lot more accommodation and facilities to take care of Asians and non-English speaking seniors as immigrants. There was always a fear. There's always going to be a fear that all the services that you're wanting to have that other normal people would just expect, it still had to be mediated. There has to be a translator. There has to be, you know, like even talking to a doctor or talking to a nurse.
You don't always have a Chinese doctor or a Chinese nurse. Or
they couldn't trust anything, you know, 100%. Mm-hmm. And even when it was getting translated by a translator professionally, they still kind of just
had a hard time,
didn't
trust
things. So
it's hard,
that made trying to age gracefully, like that phrase, aging gracefully, really difficult. And I always said to myself, okay, after seeing all of that, I'm going to age gracefully. But I can't.
It's hard. Is there such a thing as aging gracefully?
There is, but it comes with privilege.
That's true.
And I say that in terms of economic privilege, racial, you know, cultural. I'm living in Montreal, where, like, just the other day, well, a week ago only, I'm in the hospital in emergency by myself, 65 years old, and I can barely understand what the freaking nurse is saying as my head is bleeding, because I'm not fully bilingual. So I felt the fear that my parents were feeling when they were, you know.
Alone and unable to understand the language, and especially because, like, 2 weeks ago, because of the pandemic, the COVID, we couldn't be with you in the waiting room, so you had to be there all alone. And I mean, Dad and I were also worried, you know, or worried that we couldn't offer you support or just some translation, yes, but also just like to help you like not worry and yeah. just yeah take it easy.
So you know what happened last night? I was going to sleep and I, you know, like the stitches are out, I've washed my scar and whatever, and I was about to fall asleep, and then I felt all this sudden insecurity come over me. And I know that, you know, it doesn't matter what you and your dad and how everybody wants to kind of like do everything that you can to make me feel safe. And that's where your mothering comes in sometimes. It's right. like annoying. Yeah. It makes me feel like, you know, incompetent or, you know, like I don't want to feel like I'm old already. But at the same time, I also felt like you're never going to really understand what it feels like to be in my shoes because you've never had to live that tension.
Right.
So I woke up in the middle of the night and I just yelled out, I'm going to hire somebody to take care of me when I get old because no one else around me can.
Oh, no.
Daddy was asleep.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
But I realized what a thing, I don't want to be like mommy and my mom who just sat in her apartment and cried herself to sleep every night when she was in her last years after Gong Gong had died because she wasn't, you know...
She felt misunderstood. There was no one who could understand what she was going through. Yeah. Even like her children, like, you know, you feeling like I can't understand you and your experience. She also must have felt like maybe you guys couldn't understand what she was going through.
No, the hardships, right? Because, you know, she had two sons that were living around her and all they thought she needed to do was like, if they fed her good food, like, the way that she mothered them, talking about, you know, becoming your mother, was the way that they kind of like parented, like, or took care of her.
Right.
Because all she did when she wasn't mothering her children was to give them money and feed them well.
Right.
And, you know, just like be there and spend time that way, but not necessarily check in and talk to her about what was on her mind or stuff like that. So, of course, Uncle Wayne and Uncle David did their due diligence as, you know, children. Every week, you know, to take Popo out, you know, to a restaurant and have something that she likes to eat and maybe like have them sit and watch, you know, the grandkids playing, but they never actually talked to her.
Right.
And she was incredibly lonely.
She had lost
emotionally
that.
Lonely. Yeah. She, you know, so she just took those conversations that she might have, you know, to the TV. But oddly, I guess, and also ironically, when I was spending time, and because I also had language skills and I could talk to her, it was disturbing and upsetting for her to talk about stuff. She didn't want to revisit those emotions. So she would still then turn around and go dive back into her TV. You know, it was like sometimes too much of the opposite extreme, you know, having no support and then having too much support.
Because after, you know, whatever, like 80 years of not talking about your feelings, it's hard to suddenly start talking about it.
And
where do you begin?
Even if she did, you know, trust me to talk to me about stuff, I'm only there for like a week or two and then I'm gone again. You know, so that's one of the things that I feel bad about, that I couldn't sustain, or I didn't sustain a continuing emotional support from my mom. But I was not able to do that because I needed to.
You have to support yourself and emotionally.
Yeah, thinking about what does it mean, you know, to age gracefully, or the fear of becoming like your mother or your father. I almost feel like it's inevitable that there are things, aspects of our family and our parenting that will pass on, but I really wholeheartedly believe that we have agency and we have control and we can change our own destiny. But the most important thing is to be kind and accepting, not only of the mistakes of our parents, but our own mistakes that we might make, and not to feel that...
Not to feel guilt or... shame or anything like that. Yeah. Let's say, like, just going back to your example of, like, watching TV or watching soap operas, you know, like, just hearing you reflect on it, you can understand that, like, for you, it's a sense of release or escape or relaxation, you know, and Popo, like, she probably enjoyed watching her soap operas, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
It gave her lots of joy.
Yeah. So as much as from the outside, like, you as her child and, like, me and Amelia watching you watch TV, you know, we might be like, oh, don't watch so much TV, you know? But it brings you a lot of joy. And I mean, heck, you've worked so hard all of your life. Like, if you want to watch TV, you can watch TV.
What about you? Never mind. I'm still your mom.
Yes.
And it just, like, drives me crazy that that's what I feel like I've passed on to you. Like, just as a way of kind of dealing with our tensions and our day-to-day stresses, that, you know, you go away and you start binging on things like playing Sims for endless hours. But that's something about, there's something about to be said about human nature.
Well, and it's not just, like, it's the society we live in, too. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's on screens now, 24/7, so.
That's what we should be raging about.
Yeah.
But you can't just blame it on all the things that are around us. I mean,
that's true.
It's important to kind of take responsibility for what we've experienced and what we're doing. But I actually think this one thing that I do want to say about this whole kind of subject of raging Asians, about the society's perception of Asians, even if it wasn't sort of like a stereotype, I think what's interesting is that regionally, like in China, because of the dialect that people speak, if you speak Mandarin, you seem, you're supposedly perceived as being more sophisticated, more well-educated, and more literate. But if you're a Southerner and you speak Cantonese or you speak Toisanese, just because of the intonation of the language, when you talk, everybody thinks you're yelling at each other.
Like, it's harsher, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's important, I think, to accept that there are those kinds of linguistic qualities, but that also we need to just laugh at them and make fun of them ourselves before, and not take the way that other people kind of, like, categorize us seriously. I feel like it's normal, like, for anyone to express, like we talked about earlier, like, frustration and anger, and how do they get expressed, you know? Yeah, some people go out and, like, hit a baseball bat, you know. Some people, like, work
or
out
with his cane,
right? Yeah, other people, you know, use creative expression. But, you know, rage can come, rage, you know, everything has two sides to it. Rage can come with some pure pleasure, like when I was thinking, just like I was just talking about language right now. Well, in Chinese, when you call, when you say something like, oh my God, you can say oh my God in English in 10 different ways, and it could mean 10 different levels of intensity, right?
Right.
Oh my God.
Right.
Oh my God.
Depending on your facial intonation.
So same thing with ayya.
Yeah.
You say ayya.
Right.
Oh my God. Ayya. Which means like,
a
oh,
short
it hurts.
Like,
yeah.
Or you can have a long, ayya. Like,
yeah.
Should we say it together? Okay. One, two, three.
Ayya! That's a short one.
Thanks for listening to our conversation on becoming your mother. This week's Raging Asian podcast featuring Mary Seo-Yi Wong. Stay tuned for next week's episode. And in the meantime, keep screaming, ayya!